Now, in 2020, inmate populations in Wisconsin's jails and prisons dropped significantly. That's according to a new report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum looking at the impacts of the pandemic on incarceration. We're going to dive into that report, then we'll look at what the news could mean for wider efforts toward criminal justice reform. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for about how the pandemic hit prisons and jails in Wisconsin? Do you have a personal connection or interest in the state's criminal justice system? What do you think of the idea of trying to reduce the overall population of people in Wisconsin in jails or prisons? If you like that idea, how do we do it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We start the conversation with Jason Stein, Research Director with the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Jason, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
How big were the drops you found in the report for jail and prison populations in the state?
Sure. Well, jails dropped precipitously, you know, just in the April and May, right after the pandemic really hit, and they dropped 35% statewide and in most counties statewide, and then picked up somewhat since then, but they are still 24% below, you know, the same month last year, so as of December. Now, on the state prison side, their inmate populations have been falling just more steadily and not by as much, and they are a little less than 16% below, you know, in February 2020, below where they were in February 21, they're 16% below February 2020. That's what I'm trying to tell you, Rob.
And I could see a couple of things causing that. It could mean that more people are being released from jail or prison, and it could mean that fewer people are being sent there in the first place. Do we have a sense of how much of either side of the equation that is?
It's really kind of two different stories between local jails and prisons. In local jails, a number of inmates or people in custody were released initially and quickly to reduce the population in the jails and slow the spread of the virus. You know, and those individuals may have been placed under pretrial supervision or electronic monitoring, you know, some form of local supervision. At the state level, it's not as much a case that there was just an immediate letting people out. There was an emergency order that was signed by the governor in March of 2020 that put a moratorium on new admissions to try and prevent the, you know, entry of COVID-19 into the prisons. And so to some degree, there's still a backlog of like 1,200 or 1,300 male inmates who have been sentenced to prison, but they haven't yet been transferred from county jails. So in that sense, there's actually some people in county jails that would typically already be in prison. And then we've also seen court trials slow during the pandemic, which, you know, certainly reduces the number of people in state prisons because it reduces convictions. It may have a sort of differing effect at the jail level. There may be, in some cases, more people awaiting trial in jail. And then finally, there are some just policy changes that have been made at the state and local level to reduce populations in recent years. Like at the state level, there's been changes to that result in fewer people who are on extended supervision being revoked and returned to prison for either a new crime or just a violation of the terms of their release.
One more part of the story here in this report, spending per capita, I guess, per inmate went up last year. I'll go out on a limb. Is that partly for health precautions, or what is driving that?
Well, you know, I don't know that we have spent. We looked at spending data that was through 2017, so we don't have real solid spending data for the real time period of the pandemic yet. But I think it's reasonable to think that we would not have seen a huge drop in spending, because there's probably some savings in areas like food, medical care, certain programming that's sort of given on to inmates on a more individual group basis. But when you think about just what is the nature of a jail and prison, I mean, they have to be staffed 24/7. You know, if you still have, unless you can do something like close the wing of a prison, you can't necessarily get any savings from just having fewer people in this institution that you're staffing on a 24/7 basis.
Jason, thanks a lot for sharing this with us today.
Oh, my pleasure, Rob. Thanks for having me.
That's Jason Stein, Research Director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Now I'll bring on Ion Main, Assistant Professor at the UW Law School in Madison. He researches the influence of race and class-based disparities in civil and criminal settings. Ion, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, this strikes me as kind of an unintentional, unplanned experiment in what I think they call decarceration, getting people out of the prison system. As you look at these numbers in Wisconsin and around the country, what is on your mind as somebody who researches related issues?
I mean, there's so much on my mind, and I appreciate you discussing this issue, and thank you to your listeners for being part of this discussion. It's an important time, and so much is happening. Even in the past year, I'm part of kind of policy groups that are looking at ways of changing traditional ways that we have approached what we view as criminal justice issues. And the ideas are starting to sound what some people would say radical, other people would say long due. But as you know, and others know, there is really, in many respects, a bipartisan kind of agreement that we have reached a point of crisis. And I think it's things like this where, as Jason was saying, there's a 15% drop, for example, in Wisconsin prisons because of COVID. And we'll see soon what the studies are that come out of whether people's concerned about whether a crime has gone up, whether there are some public safety issues that are negative because of a reduction in prison. I'm not a betting man, but I will say there will not be any kind of problems, because in my view, at this point, we have so many people in prison that the criminal system now is actually undermining, from my perspective, public safety. And I'm not alone in thinking this.
The criminal justice system is undermining public safety, which I think is the opposite of what people might think it's doing or there to do. Can you talk about why that would be?
Yeah, you know, there's a number of sociologists now that have been looking at this from a number of years. 2009 was our high point. We've been, you know, decreasing a bit since then. It's still way, way, way above historical averages of incarceration rates. If you look at between 1925 and 1974, the incarceration rate stayed steady. It stayed at about 100 in 100,000 were incarcerated. We are now five times that rate. We could cut, in order to get down to, say, our historical kind of steady incarceration rate, we would have to cut our prisons and jails by 80%. Now, it's shocking to me to think that during Jim Crow, the incarceration rate was 80% less than it is now. And I don't understand how we could think that incarcerating so many people and the number of people it affects on the outside when you incarcerate somebody, you alter their life forever because they might be a felon and they're not going to be permitted to live where they want to live. They're not going to be able to work where they want to work. Their families will be hit with that financial aspect and that uncertainty that creates, that the financial uncertainty creates, including homelessness, including lower education rates. And so when you incarcerate someone, you are, as the state, creating an act of violence against an individual and the people connected to that individual. And so if we are going to commit an act of violence, for example, if I put you in a cage, I'm sure you'd view that as an act of violence. If we're going to commit an act of violence against someone, we better have really good reasons for doing so. And they have better have done something so severe that that's the kind of social response we should consider. Unfortunately, we've normalized a violent way of responding to people who may be engaged in unlawful conduct, but certainly prison is not the response that's going to be in any way securing my safety, your safety, public order, and permitting people to actually meet their potential as humans. And so we've normalized what is radical and extreme. And so we have to rethink about how we approach, how we invest and create healthy communities. And I do not think, and many people agree with me, that prison is the way to do that.
We're talking to Ian Main, an assistant professor at the UW Law School in Madison. We're looking at findings from a new report by the Wisconsin Policy Forum on declines in prison and jail populations in Wisconsin in 2020. And the future of our criminal justice system, how we make decisions about who to incarcerate in the first place. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your response to hearing these findings about lower inmate populations, in large part as a response to the COVID emergency? Glad to see those numbers go down, hoping that it'll continue that way, or do you think it might have happened too quickly? Do you have worries about public safety? Do you have experience in the criminal justice system, maybe as an inmate yourself? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk about criminal justice in Wisconsin with Ian Main, assistant professor at the UW Law School. We're talking about a decline in prison and jail numbers in Wisconsin in 2020, due in part to the COVID pandemic, and looking at the future of our criminal justice system. Who gets incarcerated? Do we rely too much on jails and prisons? Do you have an experience as an inmate yourself, as someone who worked with them as a social worker? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's go to your calls now. John is with us in Elkhorn. John, hi.
Hello. I have quite a bit of experience, actually. I committed a crime in 92 and basically got off of parole in 2016. I spent almost 14 years in prison. And during that time, I did as many programs as I could. I went to college, though the professors came to the University of Green Bay, from University of Green Bay to Green Bay Prison. And I graduated from UW Milwaukee just in 2016. With a degree. And I've seen in the years that I was in, from going in to coming out, I saw a huge influx of population and a decrease in all the programs that would help guys when they would get out so they didn't come back. I mean, Green Bay had over 14 vocational programs when I went there in 93, and by the time I left, they had two. And I left there 5 years after I got there and went to Medium, to Oshkosh. But since I've been out and since I got off parole in 2016, I've seen several guys that have gone back just from the fact that they can't make it out here. People won't hire. I mean, I have 2 degrees and I can't get a job because people look at me as a felon and that's all they see, even though it's been 30 years.
John, so, thanks a lot for sharing your story. I appreciate it. And good luck into you in finding a job. Ian, a lot there. Can you talk about John's story and the difficulty after someone's been incarcerated of, as John says, finding a job, getting training while they're there, and after, there's a lot to work on.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. And John, I thank you for sharing your story, and I appreciate you telling everyone else about how hard it is out there. And for a lot of people, I'm glad you spoke out. For a lot of people, it's an issue that's they're really ashamed about, and they shouldn't be. They paid their debt to society and they should be able to work like anyone else, and their aspirations and their dreams hopefully are met. Economically, it's really, really brutal. About 90% of employers will, definitely check if someone has a criminal background. That will be disqualifying, and it's disqualifying in two ways. You don't hear back, or you're told that because, say, you have a felony conviction, you are not going to be hired there. That also extends to housing. And a lot of people aren't able to find housing they need and find secure housing, which is essential to living a productive life, to having relationships that are important. You need to have financial security to have relationships, to raise a family in an environment that's safe and that feels secure. And so all those things are so important, and yet, and this doesn't speak to John's issue, but across the board, it is so easy to get a felony. And I have seen people with drug possession for the second time, their misdemeanor is turned into a felony for the rest of their life. They are going to have a hard time finding employment and being a productive member of society because they possess marijuana or paraphernalia for smoking marijuana twice. And to me, I just don't see how that in any way strengthens our society and moves along in terms of progress. I just don't see it.
Thanks a lot for that call and sharing your story. We'll go to Steve now in Manitowoc. Steve, hi.
Hi. Great subject, great topic. I often wonder if the resistance to criminal justice reform is because there are moneyed interests that make money off of incarceration. What are your thoughts?
Steve, thanks for the call. People talk about private prisons, for example. I don't think we have any of those here in Wisconsin, but are there, I guess, financial or economic incentives for keeping prison populations large? Steve is asking.
Yeah, Steve, great question. I'm glad you raised that there are moneyed interests. In fact, the American Bar Association has been discussing a resolution to support the prohibition of private prisons because the incentive should not be to make sure that you have beds filled with inmates. That is a perverse kind of incentive. A number of people are thinking and writing about exactly what you're raising, calling it the industrial prison complex. You have vested interests, strong lobbies, both terms of unions, both in terms of government actors who, there's federal funding that comes into areas, will help fund a prison in your county. People are hurting in that county economically, and it becomes a boon, and they become dependent on the prison. And that's not the kind of structure or architecture that's going to, again, or the kind of infrastructure that's going to lead to long-term kind of viability and success. But I understand the pressure that various places feel. And when they're faced with the idea of an attractive federally built or state built funded system that's going to create employment, I see the incentive. But to all those jurisdictions out there, resist it and push back, because it just is not the way forward.
Thanks for the call. We had a call from Fred who couldn't stay on the line, wanted to bring up concerns about victims' rights and worries about repeat offenders that could get lost in the shuffle if we're too, I guess, quick to release people from prison or lower punishments. What would you say to those concerns?
Yeah, I think those are always important concerns. And I think it's really important to listen to victims of violent crime and what they want. And there's a lot of work in this area, and I'm glad that was brought up. And in terms of what victims want, honestly, that's not discussed that much, and it's not discussed with victims. For example, a lot of victims feel like their needs are not being met regardless of what happens within this particular system. There are some really, really powerful and interesting programs that are being piloted now in New York and other places, in which even in where there's been a violent incident and you have the agreement of the victim, that there is a mediation and, a restorative justice approach. And the victim asks for it. The victim wants that road forward. And providing victims that option is a really powerful tool to give power back to the victim. A lot of victims after a traumatic crime or a violent act feel powerless. And one of the best things we can do is protect the victim and create a structure that gives power back to that victim. And in the traditional, there's prosecutors who are working really, really hard. But many times their caseload's so high, there's so much pressure, they can't attend to the victim. And so the victim feels powerless throughout the process. In terms of repeat offenders, that's a big question. In terms of violent crimes, it's important but statistically very small portion of all the crimes out there. So it's also important when we think about crime, we think about the full spectrum, and most of it is happening at the misdemeanor level. We have 12 million people cycle through jails a year. Very few of those statistically are violent crimes. So the question and the concern is absolutely important. I think we should always be listening to victims and making sure that as much as we can, we attend to the needs of victims who have been hurt. But at the same time, think about the criminal system as it actually is, which is mostly nonviolent crimes that then still lead to long periods of incarceration.
In our last minute or so, Ian, where do you think we should be starting to look at changes to reduce this reliance on incarceration?
You know, I think this is really an exciting space, and I hope the listeners really think about talking to their community leaders about programs like this. But there are places in Washington and Colorado, in Texas and Arizona, who are completely changing the way they approach problems, especially those misdemeanors and low-level crimes, in which that instead of a response team that's police, the response team are social workers. And these have been piloted in operation for some places as long as 20 years, but it's something that's happening in the last 2 years, so that when a call goes to dispatch, rather than the police responding, a social worker responds and then builds really strong networks with the surrounding kind of social networks that create and help bring that person into a productive space. That's a really exciting place. And I think a really another exciting place is in the pretrial detention place, where judges, certainly places like Milwaukee, are really, really attempting to rethink how they approach it and make sure that they allow people the freedom they need to connect with their families and get that strength and maybe avoid a criminal outcome.
Really, Ian, we'll leave it there.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, that's Ian Main, assistant professor at UW's law school. We talked about a decline in prison populations in Wisconsin last year and looked ahead at the future. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.